This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
When we glass slows down, that was his idea. And honestly, he got killed. And so he doesn't want to own it. And I said, you know what? Rather than us debating who's owning it, I'll take it. If we close down the country, I will take it, because we're closing it down for border security, and I think I win that every single time.
If President Trump wants to throw a temper tantrum ahead of the holidays and cause a Trump shutdown, it'll be solely on his back. We hope he chooses one of the two reasonable options we gave him, and that the country can avoid a Trump shutdown.
Wow, things have certainly changed as the tide went in the opposite direction. Hey, everybody, Kate Delaney here on America Tonight. And what changed? First, no government shutdown. For now, the Senate passed one of those brilliant stopgap funding bills that they do to avert a shutdown. But stay tuned for February 8th, because it funds it through February 8th. So there'll be more discussion on that. I am certain of it. And then in the meantime, what's happened with the wall and the $5 billion and the Prez is a change of attitude on the whole funding situation. So what does that mean? Kellyanne Conway, who certainly is one of the major mouthpieces for the Prez, says that there were, you know, they didn't want to see the government shut down, that wasn't responsible, that wasn't what he wanted to do, what the president wanted to do. So now there are other ways, of course, to get that $5 billion funding. So this fight over border security and the wall, it is far, far, far from over. And there's no doubt that the president is restless and sensitive about lack of the border wall, because he's used to getting things done. He's used to being able to fight for what he wants, and now as the president and in the political arena, it's a little bit different maneuvering there versus business. So the president at this point knows, according to sources, that there are other ways to skin that cat, so to speak. And there are other pockets that can grab the money, that can get the money that we're talking about. And also the fact that the president is insistent that Mexico is going to pay for the border wall through the newly negotiated trade agreement between Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. So think about that. He said Mexico is paying indirectly for the wall through the new USMCA, the replacement for NAFTA. Far more money is coming to the U.S. because of what's happening at the border, including the criminal and drug influx that we've seen. And the United States military will build the wall, is what the Prez is saying. And I mentioned Kellyanne Conway. She also talked about the border security. She said they're trying to make a four-letter word when the president has been talking about border security all along, as have the Democrats until he became president. So the war of words is far, far, far from over, my friends. But government shutdown, not happening. At least through February 8th, funding for the wall, moving a couple things around. We'll see where that $5 billion comes from. There's even a GoFundMe page that's up about the wall and funding. And they're raising quite a bit of money, feeling confident that they may get more money than you can imagine, including maybe $1 billion. So how about that? You know, Rush Limbaugh, I heard him today when I was cruising around with the Honey Will You list. You know, there's the Honey Do list. You guys get it? It's the Honey Will You list. And so he was talking about that. He says that Trump gets nothing and the Democrats get everything, including control of the House in a few short weeks, and that Trump is going to get less than nothing because the compromise strips out the $1.6 billion for the wall that the Senate Appropriations Committee had already approved weeks ago. That's gone too. And then, of course, the president backed off of his demand for funds to build the wall. But as you heard me say, he's saying there's another way to get it, and part of that is Mexico. And even there was one just really short tweet that said, one way or the other, we will win the wall. We'll win the wall. So this is a turnabout from what you heard as we open up the segment, and the president, of course, saying he would be proud to shut the government down over the wall, but that's not going to happen. They just can't come up with an agreement on funding for it, and that's it. So you got your short-term spending bill, and there's no money for the wall in that short-term spending bill. Limbaugh's right. It is stripped out. It's gone. It's not bloated. It's not allocated. It's not anything. There's nothing there, and it isn't really any kind of a compromise. I think it's kind of a two-step, and the two-step is stepping in a different direction to find the money. That's what I think happens, right? But it's not Congress backing it, that's for sure. Definitely not having that happen. All right, as we continue to go through what's happening in Foggy Bottom, as they affectionately call Washington, D.C., for many, many reasons, especially if you've been there in the summertime, another big story broke that affects probably some of you, maybe some of you listening. You know, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears have gone into wars where there wasn't clearly anything that we walked away with where, like you used to, the ticker tape parades, you know, in New York. When you think of, you have to go way back into the recesses of your mind, World War One and World War Two. But the president made an announcement on Wednesday saying, we have defeated ISIS. We are leaving, withdrawing troops from Syria. We're withdrawing troops from Syria. In fact, here's President Trump in his own words. Maybe. He's talking about, again, the withdrawal of troops from Syria, saying, you know, listen, we have beaten, I'll tell you what he said. He said, we've beaten ISIS. But the reaction to it was different, where you had Lindsey Graham, who said that the Syria withdrawal is a stain on the honor of the United States. And we haven't seen Lindsey Graham, the senator from South Carolina, go against the press recently, but he did on this one, saying that, why is this happening? Why is this decision on Syria? And, of course, it's not an overnight kind of thing that's happening. I know someone that was supposed to be deployed, and it looks like maybe that deployment's on ice. The president was adamant that American troops have to come home from Syria. He announced it to pretty much to this crowd in Ohio where he was. They're planning for the withdrawal is underway. But some are warning that's a big mistake. Russia and Iran, they say, are going to gain stronger footholds in Syria when the U.S. presence is gone. And then what about ISIS? President says ISIS is defeated. So the timing and the pace of the troop withdrawal is interesting. But the White House said it's already begun. That there just wasn't a whole formality about it that we've seen with previous presidents' declarations. Stay with us. More coming your way next.
It's been said, any society is only 3 missed meals away from chaos. Those times may be near. Think about it. Our country faces multiple terrorist threats and aggressions from Russia and North Korea. Social unrest and violent marches yet again may lead to looting of stores and city shutdowns. And our crumbling infrastructure leaves our power grid vulnerable to long-term outages from a single cyber attack. When the chaos from any one of these threats arises, the government knows it can't provide during a widespread national emergency. That's why you need your own plan for self-reliance. That's where My Patriot Supply comes in. Get a four-week survival food supply for only $99. That includes breakfast, lunches, and dinners. Order online at preparewithgcn.com. $99 for 4 weeks of survival food that tastes like homemade cooking and lasts up to 25 years from My Patriot Supply. Get your kits today at preparewithgcn.com. Free shipping is included. Preparewithgcn.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to produce an endless supply of nano-sized silver solutions right from the convenience of your home. Silver Lung. With the addition of our unique lung delivery system, respiratory infections are targeted directly, where traditional oral administration simply cannot reach. This pioneering method also preserves the original particle sizes and delivers your silver solution directly into the bloodstream. See the Silver Lung generator and lung delivery system at silverlungs.com. That's silverlungs.com.
You haven't experienced yogurt until you've tried Amasi, embodying health and flavor in a true whole milk, green-fed dairy beverage. Every sip pays homage to our old-world cows and the ancient culturing methods their milk benefits from. With over 30 probiotics, Amasi's undeniably nutritious, refined, cultured sensation bolsters your health and awakens your passion for dairy. Amasi's so good, and you need to try it. Contact your Youngevity distributor or call 877-878-4203 or go to gcnteam.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the Mineral Doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for Life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, but I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for Life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
If you know Kate Delaney, then you know that her lovable golden retriever, Mahalo, makes her world go around. So when Kate started looking for a high-quality dog food for him, she settled on Life's Abundance, the all-stage grain-free food. It's rated 5 stars by Dog Food Advisor, and that's a win. In fact, Kate loved the food so much that she's now repping the food at kateskibble.com. It's full of high-quality protein and nutrients, omega-3s and more. Kateskibble.com is just what Mahalo needs to be happy and healthy. Grab a bag at kateskibble.com.
Now we've won. It's time to come back. They're getting ready. You're going to see them soon. These are great American heroes. These are great heroes of the world because they fought for us. But they've killed ISIS. Who hurts the world? Our boys, our young women, our men, they're all coming back. And they're coming back now. We won. And that's the way we want it. And that's the way they want it.
All right, there's the president talking about the withdrawal. And how he feels about that, and that's the way they want it. That's the way we want it. And there had been planning for this. I mean, you know, if we wind the clock back, just not a lot of discussion about this. But, you know, there was the rallying cry that this is going to happen, that, you know, we are planning for withdrawal. And sure enough, here it is. But you got even some of the Republicans, who some of the allies of the president, certainly, I mentioned one, Lindsey Graham, who was not happy about that. And then Senator Bob Corker, foreign relations chairman, of course, told reporters on Wednesday after returning from the White House, where he went to meet the press but was told the meeting was canceled. He said, my sense is that it's been a shock through the administration that this was made, that this decision was made. My understanding is we're beginning to move out right now. It's hard to imagine he would wake up and just make this kind of decision without enough communication. And he made the first public comments, and this is why it's exploded, on Wednesday evening in a video message posted to Twitter, where he pointed to the sky to reference U.S. military personnel who have been killed in Syria. And that's true. I mean, certainly there's been plenty of blood, sweat, and tears lost to the wicked sands in the Middle East in some pretty prickly places, and this is the latest one, Syria, and especially with the nefarious tactics of ISIS. And other splinter groups that somehow can get involved, that get involved, that are parts of a, I guess, the same terrorist network, we could call it that. But there, we know there are splinter groups too, and this was the decision. So what does that mean? What about the countries in the area? Were they consulted or informed or described or any of that? Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was one of the people who got a call on Monday. And then there was a conversation with Mike Pompeo on Tuesday. This is going to be rolled out. So there was a closed-door meeting. The Senate Republicans and lawmakers gave the VP, Mike Pence, an earful, supposedly, about the decision. But, you know, this is it. This is kind of a surprising pushback or astonishing or whatever word you want to use from Republicans. They have avoided criticism when it comes to the president and keeping the party succinct and all that stuff. But I think the there's unease about abruptly withdrawing troops from Syria without consulting Congress or getting consensus among the national security team. But it's done. I mean, it's not going to be rolled out overnight. This is one of the things that he talked about, though. The president talked about when he was campaigning doing this. I know I heard that during the campaign. This is another item on the checklist. I promised you I will. I promise this will happen. You got about 2,000, roughly, give or take, troops that are there. Senator Joe Dunford, the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said this month, by the way, that the U.S. needed to train thousands of local fighters. We've known that before from the Iraq situation to ensure a lasting defeat of the terror group. But last week, the U.S. Special Envoy to the Anti-ISIS Coalition, Brett McGurk, said U.S. forces will remain in Syria even after the terror group is defeated. So, you know, it could mean that there is a small but mighty band that's left behind that is comprised of State Department official types, diplomats, if you will, and then more, you know, some troops that would be there. That wouldn't be shocking, but what would the margins be, I guess, that is the key thing. What is that? How big are the margins is what I would ask. And we don't know. We know that, the, you know, 2,000, that's a chunky number, but moving them all, that's probably not going to happen overnight. I know it's not going to happen overnight. It's not possible. So what does it mean? You know, there was conversation about a long engagement, that this was going to continue to go on and on and on and on and on. But now it's not happening. I feel compelled to go from that story, which is huge, by the way, and what you think the fallout is. Is there the upside to this? What's the downside to this? I mean, to me, you know what the downside to this always was? Is this a winnable situation? What does a win look like? How many lives are lost in this, what I think is a futile battle in one sense, right? Of course, going after terrorists. Of course, gathering allies up and thwarting them any way possible. But at how much cost is that to consistently rotate tours in and out, in and out, in and out? And what specifics are happening to change hearts and minds? You know, you talk to a general or two, especially off the record, people who were in play at one point in those areas. And how do you do that? Well, you have to be invested in the area. You have to build roads and schools and all those things and pump even more money into it. And then how do you protect it becomes the next part of that question, and especially the area, the vast area we're talking about, and some of the more remote regions in that vast area, and getting to those camps and encampments, etc., of where ISIS likes to play, and it's tough. And they have had some big wins. But an overall win, what does that look like? This story is just absolutely appalling and sickening to me. And I said this, I feel compelled to bring it up because of what we've seen now with this Catholic Church and all these sexual abuse allegations. It's not new. Are we numb to it? I hope not. It's so despicable and unfair for the millions of lives who have been destroyed. So the Illinois Attorney General is accusing the Catholic Church of lowballing the scope of the sex abuse allegations. And we're talking about, they're saying credible. Investigators found at least 500 additional accusations against priests and clergy compared with the 185 cases the church is saying. And they've been investigating. And, oh my goodness. You know, the lists that are coming out. The idea that clergy sexually abuse the minors, they say, is just so more extensive. The list is just so sad. You know, how do you pull people out of a list? How do you decide what is worse than the other? Are they trying to rank this list, which is, again, unbelievable, and they're looking for what's credible, and the Catholic Church is trying to figure out what constitutes credible accusations. And, of course, church leaders, if you think about it, the scandal that was created, how are they looking at, when they look at lists, how are they deciding who's worse than the other, or what is credible? What does that mean? An allegation is an allegation. But if the diocese doesn't look into it, it's not credible on their list, which is ridiculous. Supposedly they were supposed to be more transparent, and apparently, especially in this case, this is not happening. And since they started to look into it, you think about the 6 Illinois dioceses, so individual churches, have had to add 45 new names to their lists of credibly accused priests. Oh, and so sad, some of the stories. Cardinals, bishops, top clergy, they say they want to make amends. They want to help the victims. How do you help the victims all these decades later? Oh, what do? And the debate over credible and names on a list and the accusations. What does the Catholic Church know? What have they learned versus what outside investigators learned? I hope there is justice and some sort of peace for the people who were abused. I think it's terrible. Music means we got to duck out. Coming up next, we're talking to a fabulous woman with a big heart who's helping the people of Haiti. That's on the flip side. Kate Delaney, America Tonight.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
You have USA Radio News.
For USA Radio News, I'm Robert Walensky. President Trump picks Deputy Secretary of Defense Patrick Shanahan to become the acting defense secretary to replace James Mattis. Shanahan starts January 1st. Now, this is much earlier than the departure date of February 28th that Mattis mentions in his resignation letter. Mattis resigning after President Trump decides to pull U.S. troops out of Syria. President Trump on Twitter saying of Shanahan, Patrick has a long list of accomplishments while serving as deputy and previously at Boeing. He will be great! Exclamation point. And we are still in the midst of a partial government shutdown, the Senate out till Thursday. President Trump staying in Washington instead of heading to Florida for Christmas. He refuses to cave on his campaign promise to build a wall. Here's the president in a recorded White House message.
The only thing that's going to stop that is great border security.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Are you struggling with addiction or alcohol problems? If you're depressed, drinking, and using drugs, you may need help. And the Affordable Care Act guarantees coverage of substance abuse.
I knew I could get myself out of this. I just needed some hope and some help.
I took the first step to recovery when I made the call.
Call the Addiction Hope and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-854-1055. 800-854-1055.
I feel like I'm losing control. I'm afraid I'll lose my job or even my family.
Call now for hope and help with proven, gentle recovery programs.
I never thought that I could be somebody who didn't drink and use drugs.
I'm in recovery, getting the help I need.
Call the Addiction Hope and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-854-1055. 800-854-1055. 800-854-1055.
Hey everyone, Proactive MD has an incredible offer for our radio listeners only. Stay tuned for our exclusive offer that includes a free charcoal pore cleansing brush and free shipping. Proactive MD with prescription strength adapalene can heal and prevent future breakouts. Today, for just $19.95, we're offering listeners the three-piece Proactive MD system with free shipping, plus a free gift, the new charcoal pore cleansing brush. Get this exclusive offer by calling now, 1-800-583-8662, or go to proactive.com. And enter promo code radio. You heard right. Proactive MD plus free shipping and a free gift. The new charcoal pore cleansing brush. You'll get all this for just $19.95 and their 60-day money-back guarantee. You're guaranteed to get clear and stay clear, or you get your money back. Call now. 1-800-583-8662. That's 1-800-583-8662. Or go to proactive.com and enter.
Well, I don't want a lot for Christmas. There is just one thing I need. I don't care about the presents underneath the Christmas tree. I just want you for my own, more than you could ever know. Make my wish come true.
So thrilled to catch up with Mikey Edwards. He's one of the 10 tenors. They are so popular. They are back by popular demand. I'm one of those people who loves the 10 tenors. It's their second time around, and they've got so many performances lined up. Lucky for all of us here in the States, the 10 tenors do this really cool thing where when they sell copies of Our Christmas Wish, some of that goes to the St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital, which, of course, we love St. Jude's. In fact, these guys have raised a ton of money for St. Jude's. We're going to talk about that. And let's talk about the 10 Tenors, of course, and what it's like touring. The 10 Tenors blend rock, pop, and opera with, all the charm and charisma that one can muster up. How's that? All right, Mikey, what an introduction, huh? Did I do you good?
That was quite the introduction. I don't know what to say next. Thank you so much. Hi.
So you come to the States, you're popular here, and you're touring. What's it like, first of all, touring with nine other guys, and how did you guys form this group?
Well, the group started over 20 years ago in Brisbane, in Australia. It kind of got together as a bit of a corporate act, as a bit of a one-off thing. But the concept and the ideas really seemed to appeal to audiences. So they started touring regional Australia, and before too long, they were doing international tours. Obviously, 23 years ago, members have come and gone, and there are no originals with the group. But the group is touring as much as ever.
So what's it like for you being a classically trained tenor who basically, and I said it, you rock out with the other guys to icons like David Bowie and Prince? I mean, that's sort of an anomaly.
Yeah, I mean, well, one of the things that we really try to do is kind of celebrate as many types of tenors that we can. So, we've got Pavarotti in the show, but yeah, as you say, we've got Bowie, we've got Queen. It's probably one of the biggest challenges about being in the group, having to cover so many styles, but I think it was one of the best things about joining the group, getting to sing so much music that I hadn't really been able to sing before. So it's one of my favorite bits about being in the group is the diverse music that we cover.
So here's the key. Are you a tenor one or a tenor two?
Well, we do lots of switching up throughout the show. So during some songs, I might be a tenor one, and then during some other songs, I might be a tenor two. Yeah, we keep it interesting.
No kidding. How long have you been, singing? How long has that been, part of what's the passion that drives you since you were a kid?
Yeah, I started singing when I was 8 years old. I was a boy soprano, and I sang in a children's choir in Melbourne, and I just loved it, and went on to study it, and I've been touring with the Ten Tenors for 4 years now, so just kind of can't get enough.
So when you're touring with the guys, and here you are traveling around the U.S., we talk about food all the time. So, for example, I grew up in Philly. When you go to Philadelphia, everybody talks about cheesesteaks and pretzels. If you're in Kansas, they talk about beef. If you're in California, they talk about sushi or fish tacos. What's been your best food experience so far?
Well, I love barbecue. I just love it. So whenever we're kind of in the south around Kansas or in Oklahoma, you'll see me at a barbecue joint.
Inhaling the barbecue do you like the spicy sauce?
I like spicy wet barbecue. That's all me.
Oh, then you fit in perfectly. Obviously your accents attract attention. There's all of you traveling together. People, I think, get what you... Certainly, they've seen you. They get what you do. Do you find that you get quizzical looks sometimes when you're touring around?
Well, yeah, sometimes we do because it's hard to not notice kind of 10 Australians walking through either a pub or bar or restaurant or something like that. So we often do, and people go, "What are you doing here?" And sometimes we end up in the most unlikely places. But that's definitely one of the best parts of that touring, I think.
I have a friend from Melbourne, and she talks to me all the time about kangaroos, the roos, she says. And she says the roos are just like pets. I mean, they're not pets, but they're all over the place. So is that true? I mean, you go there and you can easily perhaps see one when you're driving down the road?
I mean, they're not in the city. Like in Melbourne, for instance, you're not going to see one. They're not in the streets of the city. But you don't actually have to travel that too far out of the city, and you will see some wild kangaroos, but they're not hopping down the street, I can tell you that much.
They're not hopping down the street. All right, how about koalas? Sometimes there's some confusion. They're so cute when they're stuffed, they're gorgeous when they're at a zoo, but you grew up with koalas. What are they like? Do they bite?
They're actually really grumpy. They just kind of snarl and don't do a whole lot. They just sit in a tree and just kind of snarl and grumble away. I think they're just a really really angry animal.
They're an angry animal. That's great. You just destroyed my picture. Okay, I have to ask you about this because I like music, I like sports, we like all kinds of things here on this show, and the people listening do. And there's always that argument about why do you call Aussie rules football? Come on, it's not like the NFL. So what are the dickens about Aussie rules football? What's the deal about that?
I mean, it's just, well, actually in Australia, there's kind of two, in the south, everybody plays Aussie rules, and in the north, everybody plays rugby. So we can't even really make up our own minds back home. But, it's the most popular game. We love it. In Melbourne, especially where I'm from, around September, which is the end of the season, it's just footy crazy.
I bet it's crazy. And then I have to ask you this. I have to ask you this question too, because this is the first thing it really Americans say. The idea about the water spinning in a different direction in Australia than the U.S. Why is that?
I actually would have no idea. I'm not even sure if I've paid close enough attention to even notice something like that. But I will go home, try and figure it out, and report back.
All right, I'm going to give you my email address, and we want you to call in because we want to know. That is a big burning question for me. We're speaking with Mikey Edwards of the Ten Tenors, and the Ten Tenors, as you heard, we talk about blend rock and pop and opera, and they've got fans all over the place. I mean, 90 million plus have certainly seen them, and you've got these Home for the Holidays concerts, and they've got music from the Ten Tenors' top 10 album, Our Christmas Wish. Why do you think people like Christmas music so much?
I think it just really gets you in the mood, doesn't it? I mean, as after Thanksgiving, I've started to hear Christmas tunes in the shopping malls, and it's getting me excited and getting me in the holiday spirit. And I think everybody just loves to sing along to them, so people are more than welcome to do that at our show.
Do you know what me singing? I'm not a tenor one, a tenor two. I'm not a bass or a baritone. I don't know what I am, but I know I scared the dog.
Well, that's always fun too.
yeah. Who's that woman there trying to sing? So when we talk about your Christmas songs, and as you said, it gets people in the mood. Do you have a favorite one? Is it White Christmas? Is it Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You? What do you like?
Yeah, my favorite is White Christmas. I love that song, which is funny considering we don't get White Christmases in Australia, but I just absolutely love that song. And maybe I just enjoy dreaming of a White Christmas, so.
Nice. Well, you might get to see some white snow as you are cruising around the U.S. I mentioned you're in a whole bunch of different places. You talked about barbecue and loving barbecue, so we know you like Kansas and those areas. Do you have a favorite city or a place that you've been to?
One of my favorite places that we went to on tour maybe 3 years ago, we went to New Orleans in Louisiana, and I just absolutely loved that city. It was so much fun, and we did a really cool gig there at one of their newly reopened theaters, and yeah, that was definitely a highlight of the state to me.
That's perfect. You said New Orleans because, of course, people are listening to us in New Orleans. And I love New Orleans, too. I know exactly what you mean. But here's the key, Mikey. You fall in love with New Orleans, and when you're there, you got to be careful because it's so easy to want to just plant yourself there.
I can imagine.
Sucks you in, and you want to stay. So let's talk about, and I mentioned this, the proceeds and how much of that goes toward, but just in general, what happens with the St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. Obviously, this is important to you guys because you've raised so much money already for them.
Yeah, so about 3 years ago, we released our Christmas album, Our Christmas Wish, in Australia, and we teamed up with a charity there called the Children's Hospital Foundation. And I think Christmas, it's a time for giving, and it's a time to be, you know, supporting really important causes. And when we were releasing the album in the States, there was no better organization than St. Jude Children's Research Hospital to do the same thing. So in 2016, we went to Memphis and we visited St. Jude, and we just absolutely were in awe of what they do there. And so we're really excited to be continuing to partner with them and donating all the net profits from that album straight to the kids.
Oh, I love it. So if somebody wants to get a copy of the album, how can they do that?
They can go online and they can get it on iTunes, or they can get it at Walmart, or they can come to our shows.
Perfect. I love it. Mikey Edwards, Ten Tenors, thank you so much for joining us. And you've got to find out about that water thing. It's very strange.
I'll let you know.
Thanks, Mikey.
Thank you so much.
received his herbal tea for relief right away. So write this down. DrMillersClinic.com. If you take meds, then suffer stomach distress, constipation, indigestion, acid reflux, and bloating, and nothing else helps, get Dr. Miller's Holy Tea or Super Holy Tea, a cleansing, detoxifying herbal tea now available at great rates direct from Dr. Miller's office. Call or click 888-660-7039 or DrMillersClinic.com.
Pain in my neck, back, and shoulders has really gotten worse.
Relief for body pain is here with Sunny Bay Heating Pads.
Well, the last thing I want is to take another pill, so what's so good about Sunny Bay Heating Pads?
Sunny Bay Heating Pads, made by Biomed DB Design right here in the USA, come in all sizes. Our extra-large microwavable heating pad for back pain is designed to be large enough to cover your entire back. It's also perfect to wrap around your legs, knees, or shoulder and neck.
But I need to know they're good quality.
Of course, Sunny Bay heating pads and pillows are often an Amazon choice, and it's easy and most affordable when you purchase your Sunny Bay heating pads right from our website, sunshinepillows.com, or call us 253-678-1361.
Hey, a Sunny Bay heating pad
would make a great gift, right?
Yes, and they start at just $19.99, and free shipping is available. So call 253-678-1361 or shop for your Sunny Bay heating pad at sunshinepillows.com.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
Bags under the eyes, crow's feet, fine lines and wrinkles are things adults complain about as they age. Now, there's Instantly Ageless. It works in minutes and is great for men and women.
I've probably noticed in the past 5 years that my eyes have gained a lot of fine lines, wrinkles, my crow's feet have gotten deeper. Wow. I was hoping for 5 years, but that's like what my eyes looked like 10 years ago.
That is really cool. Wrinkle gone?
It's easy. Just put it on your finger and go.
Now I wish I had more down here because I can still see one wrinkle. It's bugging me.
I am a little bit emotional. I'm turning 40. I didn't think would be a big deal to me, but that looks like the me that I feel like inside instead of what I see when I look in the mirror.
Try Instantly Ageless today at GCNLife.com. That's GCNLife.com. 30-day money-back guarantee and preferred price discount at GCNLife.com. That's GCNLife.com.
To be with the ambassador to the U.S. from Ireland, Daniel Mulhall, and boy, so much is happening in Ireland, and of course we took the show America Tonight to Ireland, as many of you know, and then wanted to go on the trip back with me as well, and there's so much to talk about. When we talk about Brexit, is Ireland and Northern Ireland, and I know you're going to talk about that as you're in Dallas, Texas, and we've had the fortune to catch up with you here, so tell us, give us a thumbnail on that, what that means for both Ireland and Northern Ireland.
Brexit is a major challenge for Ireland. It's a challenge because we have strong economic links with Britain and we want to preserve those links as best we can, but it will be challenging when Britain leaves the European Union. It may affect our trade with Britain. Politically, of course, the border in Ireland has been an open border for the last 25 years. We want to keep it that way, but it's a challenge to do so when you have Britain leaving the European Union, leaving the customs union, and leaving the single market. Everyone's agreed there can't be a hard border in Ireland, and at the moment we're just trying to figure out how to make that a reality. And what we feel we need is a guarantee that no matter what happens in the relationship between Britain and the European Union, which has to be determined over the next few years, whatever happens, there cannot be a hard border on the island of Ireland. And it's that guarantee that's currently being worked on, and it's proving a little difficult to reach agreement on.
Right, and say proving difficult to reach an agreement on, you imagine that you're a negotiator, that this is going to take some time to kind of get out of the weeds on that.
Well, of course, Brexit happened 2 years ago, the referendum took place. Since then, for the last year and a half, there have been negotiations between the UK and the European Union on what's called the withdrawal agreement. And one element of the withdrawal agreement is the arrangements in Ireland, which have to be settled before we can go on to phase two. And phase two is about the future relationship between the UK and the European Union, which is also vitally important to Ireland, of course, for reasons to do with our trade and economic links, as I mentioned. The border in Ireland is proven to be a very difficult proposition, a very difficult issue to resolve. I still remain hopeful that this will happen. We will find a solution, because frankly, not finding a solution is such a catastrophic outcome that I don't believe either side will want to face that kind of chaotic consequences. The consequence would be that Britain would crash out of the European Union, would leave without an agreement, and there would be nothing in place to regulate future UK-EU relations, and that would be hugely damaging for everyone concerned, principally, of course, for Britain, but also for Ireland.
Yeah. Before becoming the 18th ambassador to the U.S. from Ireland, you also had a similar role, obviously, with the U.K. What are the biggest differences between dealing with the Brits and dealing with the Americans? I imagine there's some nuances.
More than nuances. First of all, the scale of America is something else again. So when you live outside of America, you have no idea of what it's like, the scale of this country. And Texas, for example, would be a substantial country anywhere else in the world. In America, it's just one of the 50 states. So I find that I spend a lot of time traveling around this country. It's fascinating to see the variety of this country and to discover that there are Irish Americans everywhere you go. The second difference really is that the attitude towards Ireland is so hugely positive in the United States that it really does uplift my spirits. Whenever I feel a bit tired, I just have to go and meet an Irish American community anywhere in the United States, and that lifts my spirits right away. I find I get energy from Irish America, because this is a phenomenon that's really quite intriguing to my mind, is that people who are 3, 4, 5 generations removed from Ireland still feel an affiliation and an affection for Ireland, which is remarkable and a huge asset for our country.
Yeah, you heard me mention in the beginning that I took the show to Ireland, and the what happened was the Irish Tourism Board set something up where I did shows live from the Castle Clontarf, and they took me to Dublin and all over the place, so I got to really get a bird's eye view of everything in Ireland, Northern Ireland, and then Ireland as well. And I find the same thing, that on St. Patrick's Day here, everybody's Irish.
My summary of the St. Patrick's Day phenomenon in America would be that everywhere else in the world, St. Patrick's Day is an Irish event in which some of the locals join in to have fun. In America, it's an American event in which the Irish are part. But that's the difference. Irish Americans have such a strong sense of Irishness that they own St. Patrick's Day in America, and we become part of it, but we don't own it, whereas we own it everywhere else in the world.
I love that. Let's talk about Texas and the fact that this is big. You mentioned Irish Americans all over the place, people wanting to come to Ireland, even if they're not Irish. Americans do. I don't know what the numbers are, but I know they're high, because I looked maybe a couple of weeks ago and I saw that the tourism rate from America to Ireland was off the charts. So now there's actually going to be service straight from Dallas, right?
From next summer onwards, there'll be a direct flight from Dallas-Fort Worth to Dublin, and that will be the first ever direct link between Texas and Ireland. What that will do is it will encourage more Texans to discover Ireland, discover their Irish roots, discover our country, play golf in Ireland, enjoy what Ireland has to offer. It'll also, of course, facilitate business links, because it'll be easier for Irish companies to come here, to look at the possibility of setting up in Texas and availing of the opportunities that exist here. It will also encourage Texas companies to have a look at Ireland, because having to go via New York or Chicago or somewhere is always a drawback when it comes to doing business. So I think it's very exciting that we now have this new route plan, and I'm sure that route will grow and become a major source of connectivity between Ireland and Texas.
Yeah. Tell us about your book, New Dawning.
Well, I wrote a book in 1900 called A New Day Dawning. I'm a historian, an Irish historian by training, and I've tried to keep an interest in history. I also published a book in 2016 called The Shaping of Modern Ireland. So basically, my book that I wrote about 1900, I wrote in the year 2000, was a book that tried to explore the Ireland of the late 19th and early 20th centuries. For me, at least, that's the key moment in Irish history. In 1890, we were kind of more or less an established part of the United Kingdom, and okay, we wanted to get our own local regional parliament. It wasn't really much of a push for independence. By 1922, we were independent. Okay, the country was divided, but still, part of it was independent. Nobody could have imagined that 30 years before. So I wanted to look at that period between 1890 and 1922 to see, in particular, the period around 1900, to see what it was that changed. What changed was that we had a new kind of sense of Irishness developed. There were those who tried to revive the Gaelic language, revived our ancient Gaelic games, which are today the most important sports in Ireland, Gaelic football and hurling. Also, we had a literary revival, we had an economic revival, and an effort to create a cooperative movement in Ireland which would revive our countryside. So it was an overall effort made to revive Ireland, and that succeeded, and eventually in 1922 we became independent, but only after we'd had a revolution a rising in 1916, and then a war of independence between 1919 and 1921. So it took a while to get there, but Ireland was a place in transition at that time. And one of the things that I have always been interested in is the literature of that period. So at the moment I'm doing a blog on James Joyce's Ulysses, because I know most people maybe find the start of the book but never finish it. I'm trying to help people to get through it by doing a blog on each chapter by chapter, and by 2021 or thereabouts I'll have completed the entire book, because the centenary of the publication of Joyce's Ulysses will be in February 2022. So I'm preparing really for the centenary of that great literary occasion, which will be the centenary of the publication of Joyce's Ulysses.
Wow, so for all the James Joyce fans out there, and there are many, that's great, go and look at this book. Blog, and then you'll be able to follow along, because you're right, people complain that they can't get through it.
Yeah, you can access it through my Twitter account. I have a link to my blog there. My Twitter account is @DanMulhall, and I'm very keen to have more American followers, because I'd like to maybe have as many thousand followers as your president has millions. That would be nice.
Oh, Mr. Perfect Place to end this, but I have to ask you this. Biggest challenge in your role as the ambassador from Ireland to the U.S.?
Biggest challenge is the sheer geographical scale of the United States and the sheer scale of Irish America. I mean, how do you connect with 35 million people? I spent all my time going around, talking to people, blogging, tweeting, trying to link with Irish America, meeting Irish organizations wherever I go, doing public events. But at the end of the day, connecting with that number of people is always going to be a challenge. And it seems to me also connecting modern Ireland with modern America, that's the challenge, because we have traditional links that are very strong, we have business links, but we need, I think, to join up the dots between the story of contemporary Ireland and the story of contemporary America. It's my job to tell Ireland's story.
If you know Kate Delaney, then you know that her lovable golden retriever, Mahalo, makes her world go around. So when Kate started looking for a high-quality dog food for him, she settled on Life's Abundance, the all-stage grain-free food. It's rated 5 stars by Dog Food Advisor, and that's a win. In fact, Kate loved the food so much that she's now repping the food at kateskibble.com. It's full of high-quality protein and nutrients, omega-3s and more. Kateskibble.com is just what Mahalo needs to be happy and healthy. Grab a bag at kateskibble.com.
This is George Norrie from Coast to Coast AM and History Channel's Ancient Aliens. We support the amazing energy, nutrition, and skincare products from Jeunesse. Jeunesse products are designed by leading doctors in their field with natural ingredients and even stem cell technology. These products help your body perform and look better. Shop Jeunesse at GCNLife.com or call 1-844-443-6637. GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.